Marta, appreciate your lesson very much. Three things. One is, first off, the scriptures you've written up there barely touch the tip of the iceberg as to the fatherless, widows, and the strangers, and how much God cares about them. I wouldn't bother saying that, except so many places you get the impression that's a remote doctrine. Maybe what are you doing talking about that? But as you read through the Old Testament over and over again, my grandmother used to always quote out of Proverbs. I'm sorry, I can't quote it exactly right, but she said, "He that gives to the poor lends to the Lord." And you just have to understand how much God cares about the poor. And you're right, we've got to readjust our evaluation of the widow's two mites. One thing I want to point out, because it's not spoken about very often, and because I think we lose some elders because of it, we ought not, but I don't know what to say. A man does have to provide for his family. In a brotherhood, it's almost like we expect preachers to be supported by the brethren, and that's right, they should be. But a man's a preacher, whether he's supported by the brethren or not, to the degree that he preaches. And an elder is an elder, whether he's supported or not. But 1 Timothy 5, an elder is worthy of double honor, definitely talks about it. And while he's not accept the eldership for and to look forward to and to get the money, which the passage talks about, it's right to support him. And I think we need to say that a little more often. The brethren need to be ready for it. Because all of a sudden, brother so-and-so, who, you know, he worked like me, we're going to support him. But we need to sometimes. There's some places I've had preachers in the pulpit say, my brother, he does it. He's not an elder. He's not an elder because he thinks it's a working job. It is. Why can't he do the work? He could. But he has to provide for his family. Now, he may not choose, and it may be a step down financially. We need to be ready to support them so we get those good men in there for that. I haven't asked you a question yet. You did a good job.
That's funny.
That's a damn crowd.
Jim, I'd ask you to be sure to follow the example of the first question.
First question, I was kind of intrigued by the system of trumpets in the temple area. I was just wondering if you could tell me what the source of that information was.
Yeah, that was Alfred Edersheim, who was of Jewish origin, really had done a lot of research on the temple, and that's the book on the temple that I'd actually been using for the source of some of the research.
All right, thank you. Luke 16, verse 9, using your wealth to make friends of the world. Maybe it just passed right through me. What did you say the application was to us today?
Well, the application and the main theme, you know, a lot of times the parables, there are a lot of themes, and I had about 3 pages worth of lessons that I thought we could glean from Luke 16, the chapter, but I tried to restrict it to just those two verses, and the point may not have come across as clear. You know, the whole point that parable starts off with is the fact that the Lord was there and the steward was unfaithful. And that's how it begins. And the steward doesn't deny his unfaithfulness or anything like that. The steward comes up with the plan of how he can go to those that have resources and that are wealthy, and how he can, by finagling and doing cooking the books, as we say, how he can pull out some money. And not only have the money to live off of that was due to the Lord in that situation, but how he could be friends with those people because they owed 100 measures of oil, and he said, just pay 50. So he did them a big favor by saving them 50. And so that way, when things got tough, and he was finally put out of the stewardship, he could not, or he could go to those various friends and kind of call in the favors, if you will, and have eternal habitation.
I'm not sure he was gaining money for himself as much as he was gaining friends.
Yeah.
But when Jesus makes the application of the parable,
mm-hmm.
he gives instruction to his disciples, presumably, for them to use their wealth to make friends of the world, and in so doing, or the goal being, so that you can have eternal dwellings. Mm-hmm. So how do we obey that command today? Well, and specifically, how does that apply to us today? How do we use our money to make friends of the world so as to reap eternal benefits?
Well, and maybe I just misunderstood the parable, but my understanding of the parable was that was the negative side of it. In other words, if you make friends of the world, you will have the eternal habitation that the world has as a reward. Because that unjust steward wasn't commended. He was commended for thinking wisely. He wasn't commended for his obedience or his faithfulness.
Okay, so you take it as a warning to the disciples.
Yes.
Alan Bailey.
I hesitate to ask a question, Ben. I was only here the last 10 minutes of the talk. So if you cover this in your lesson, you can let me know and I'll just pass on. But in 1 Corinthians chapter 5, the word covetous, did you address that? And if not, do you have any thoughts that will let us know? You know, these are verses that deal with church discipline. A covetous individual is hard to assume to identify. If they're with a Christian and his money, is there a way to best identify who is covetous and who's just being conservative with his money? Could you give us a little enlightenment on that? I don't have anything to share with you, so don't turn it back on me.
Well, I tell you, as a part of my lesson, I really didn't look at that verse. And so what I will say to you is that basically I think the covetousness manifests itself in fruits. In other words, the way a person's attitude is towards giving. And it shows itself in many, many aspects, just like the other sins that are mentioned there. I think that we, in our society, have trouble differentiating it or identifying it because we've become a very affluent society. And I think that's really what it comes down to. I think that we have gained more, and so we don't look at someone who's gained more and really holding it to themselves as being that much of an issue compared to the covetousness you said.
Well, you know, in the passing in 1 Corinthians 5, when it said it was such one know not to eat, that's pretty serious. I just, between someone who's tightwad and squeaks when they turn loose of a dollar, versus someone who, I knew a guy one time that wrote a check to the church for 10 cents because he was mad at the treasurer. And I just didn't know if there's something more to covetous that we need to get a hold of. But there's a lot that I don't know about it, I'm sure. So I just didn't know if maybe someone else along the way will, but I look forward to hearing more about that. Maybe
I think the example you cited, Alan, really does bring out what I was saying though about it's manifest. It doesn't stay hidden when people are covetous. They do things like that, and they do it for the wrong reason. That's not an attitude of giving when you say I'm mad at somebody, so I'm not going to give what I should to the Lord.
Give me Cutter and then Alex.
Art, I really enjoyed that, and I would like to just comment on this Luke 16, the way I understand it. Jesus was just giving an illustration, but he wanted that illustration to explain something about how to use their wealth. I think if Jesus were living today, he might give an illustration like this. You know, you look at these people out in the world, they put 5% of their money, a lot of them, in mutual funds, and they take care of their money, they watch it, and put it in the stock market, and when they retire, they can live off of it. And this man did a similar thing. He cheated his bosses and so forth, but when he retired, he was going to be taken care of. And I think the answer lies in, he says, use your wealth in such a way as when you retire, you know, you can be accepted into eternal habitations. I think we have to take a lot of passages that you quoted, for example, 1 Timothy 6, Proverbs that Ryland pointed out. We are laying up treasure in heaven when we use our worldly wealth in the proper way. And Jesus was just trying to give this parallel, you know. Here's a guy that put all his monies in stocks, basically, in today's language. And he was prepared when he retired. And you use your wealth to lay up treasure in heaven, and you then will be accepted into eternal habitations. So that's kind of the way I see it.
And incidentally, that word Revelation 2:19 is probably not correctly translated charity. Charity does give the impression that you pointed out, but it should have just been translated love, as it was in many other passages.
Alex and then Melvin Whalen.
Just saw a couple of thoughts I would like to share. James 1:27, pure and unadulterated religion. And then the first thing that comes is you take care of the poor, basically. That's who the widows and the orphans were. And then you remain faithful. You are righteous. There's another thought, and that is the Lord has prepared people in the church to do work for the building up of the church, Ephesians chapter 4. But if you look at Romans chapter 12, Romans 12, beginning with verse 6, it says, "We have different gifts according to the grace given us. If a man's gift is prophesying, let him use it in proportion to his faith. If it is serving, let him serve. If it is teaching, let him teach. If it is encouraging, let him encourage. If it is contributing to the needs of others, let him give generously. If it is leadership, let him govern diligently," and so on. You know, it occurred to me that maybe some of us have been blessed by the Lord so that we may be able to be a blessing to others and not so that we may buy a bigger house.
Amen.
You know, and so I thought maybe we need to start thinking in terms of what we are for the sake of the body of Christ. And if we are blessed materially, maybe it is so that we can help others.
Yeah, it was Waylock and then Richard Bunner.
Appreciate the things you had to say, Art, well organized. I do have a question that, in fact, someone was asking me this morning. I heard other brethren discuss this, pertaining to giving to the church. I hear brothers sometimes complain, well, I go to a church that has a big treasury built up, and they don't use their money very well, and I'm not very happy with that. So I'm going to just start sending a big part of my contribution to an evangelist person instead of giving to the church. And that's what the thing, or giving to some worthy cause like that. What is your thinking on that, or what do you understand the Bible teaches about that?
Well, I think that sometimes when we actually take that approach, some of those individuals may have some good intentions. But I think we missed the point. The things that the money is used from the collection, you can do individually. There's no ban that says you can only do this, from my understanding of the scriptures. And I guess what I would hope is that if the individual was concerned about that, then one, they would approach the brethren about it, but two, that they would, if they want to give directly to an individual evangelist, that they would go ahead and offer to help them. And what they may find is that the thing that would help the evangelist more is not necessarily the money. It may be some other aspect that they need help with.
I think that's right. I would just mention this. I don't feel like our giving to an individual or some of the situation circumvents our obligation, however, to lay by the store on the first day of the week.
Exactly. I agree.
Yeah.
Richard.
This is a really broad topic that was given to you, and there's all sorts of questions that come to mind, but I would like for you to elaborate, or maybe sometime in the future. You know, when we talk about money and the parable there in Luke 16 and stewardship, and I think that, you know, one of the things that's really lacking for a lot of preachers, I can say that because I'm a preacher, I think, is that the preachers need to develop good stewardship or responsibility of the meager income that they get. And I think that, and I say that tongue-in-cheek, because some of us, well, the income's not meager, but some it is. And I think that's a problem, because a lot of preachers don't know how to handle their money. And so they're in financial difficulty lots of times. And a lot of churches don't know how to handle their money. And that's why some preachers are not supported well. And that's why there may be widows and orphans and the poor that sometimes are looking in other places to receive financial aid when shame on the congregation where they attend. And I'd just like for you to mention the idea of stewardship, how people should budget themselves and not go into debt, and things of that nature.
Well, I think that's a topic. First of all, let me just say there are a lot of resources throughout the Brotherhood that can be called upon to get information on some of the planning for retirement, the management of money, all those kinds of things. Not to mention all the other resources there are everywhere else also. And I think that one of the things that it's easy for us to look at is it's easy for us to look at stewardship sometimes from a spiritual perspective and really be wanting to focus on being about our Father's work in that regard and not really see the individual stewardship responsibility we have that links in with providing for our families or things of that nature. I agree with you, Richard. I think there are a lot of problems that are caused by, and I don't know the smooth way to say it, I think a lot of problems are caused by us wanting to be like the people around about us. And so we want to have a lot of the things that the people around about us have, and we commit a lot of resources towards doing that, and then suddenly recognize that some of those things are fairly big traps as far as financial stability. And so I think we do need to talk more about that. I think we need to teach our children more about that in being effective stewards of not only the spiritual duties, but also the carnal things.
James Orton and then Randy Tidmore.
I want to respond to Alan Bailey's question. I want to help him get ready to discipline those folks. Paul said covetousness is idolatry, and that goes a long way. It doesn't make it completely objective, but it goes a long way to helping us know when somebody's being covetous. If they put material things before the Lord, then that's covetousness. They put anything else like pleasure or whatever, that's idolatry too. But it's clear, more clear, when people put property, getting wealth, using wealth, etc., before the Lord.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Brother Randy Tidmore.
Could you make a comment? I don't want to go to a lot of the verses, but just briefly mention verses that we're familiar with. In Galatians, for instance, it talks about as we have opportunity to do good, let's do good to all men, especially those of the household of faith. With that idea in mind, and giving to the poor, not just members of the church, as an individual I'm talking about, of course, and in our culture that has come up in the last 10, maybe 15 years, with all these professional sign holders on corners and things that go on, and one of the things that Jesus said about giving to those who ask, and also though that as far as the church is concerned, if a man do not work, neither should he eat. Would you make comment with in general or explanation of how guilty should we feel? For instance, if I know of people in the church that need help, am I right to take money that I could give to them and give to somebody who may just be a professional because they're asking?
Well, I think there's a number of things associated that in kind of in a broad sense. First, you know, we have to be wise as serpents and harmless as doves. I think there's a lot of wisdom that's necessary in what we do. You know, I heard a report somewhere, read a report that talked about some of the professional panhandlers that may make $80,000 or $90,000 a year. I always try in those kind of situations not only to help them with something other than money, but to also assist them from the standpoint of if they say they need food, let's go get some food, you know, and, you know, take them to the McDonald's or whatever. What you'll find is most of them won't go. They won't accept that. That definitely gives some indication as to need. I think, though, that our responsibility to help is clearly there, and I think that our responsibility in carrying out that responsibility, when we help for good purposes, we're rewarded for what we do, not for what someone else actually carries out wrong with something that we've given them to use. And I think that's one of the principles. I know some of the other folks may not agree, but I think that's one of the principles of Luke 16, actually, is that that steward had the responsibility to help in a proper way, and he did. The Lord wasn't, you know, diminished in his desire to see that because the steward made the wrong choice.
Anyone else have a comment? We got time for one more. Jimmy Cutter.
My comment on that, you know, we've got a guy in the audience, I think, yeah, Kenneth Curley back there. When I lived in Amarillo, he had a painting crew, and these people would come by and they would, you know, need money, need a job, they'd say. He'd pick them up, sometimes let them spend the night with him, and say, hey, I've got a job. Well, I don't know, you can ask him, but it must have been dozens and dozens of people who never showed up to work, or the next morning when they woke up and they decided they couldn't work that day. But it doesn't relieve us of a responsibility to help. I know these people in Zimbabwe, there were some white mercenary soldiers who had been left behind in Zimbabwe, and they were living on the streets and under plastic and all that, and they were just winos. And they told me, they said, you know, we can make $50 a day, Zimbabwe dollars, which was good. And they would spend it all on drinking. And they didn't have to work every day, just enough to get their alcohol. And but we still, I still will help a beggar in Moscow or whatever. And I know that perhaps they're getting a lot of money that way. But anyway, you know, I still think we do it from time to time.
Okay, we'll take one more.
In Luke 16, who's the master that the Christian defrauds and cheats? Who is that master?
Well, I was under the impression it was the Lord.
No, it's money. At least that's my commentary on it.
Okay.
Verse 14 and 15, the Pharisees heard this, and they were lovers of money. And so they derided Jesus. And verse 15 says, and he said to them, you are all those who justify yourselves before men, but God knows your hearts. For what is highly esteemed among men is the abomination in the sight of God. And I think the big problem for most of us is this discerning what's valuable to God. That's why we have to figure out what the two mites is all about. And what's valuable to men. And as far as eternal treasures, you know, he's saying, and I'm sorry just to stand up and be against you that way, but I think it's money. You can either have God as your master or money, it says in verse 12, 13. No servant can serve two masters, for either hate the one and love the other, or is he but loyal to the one, despise the other. You cannot serve God and man.
So you're saying that the money was...
Money's the master. Father? Yeah, and that's the whole...
Well, no, I know money's the monster, but I thought you...
The master. Master.
I thought you were asking who was defrauded.
Who does a Christian defraud?
Okay.
Not who the children of light defraud.
Okay, I think I see your question.
The parable's so weird because it's immoral to defraud your employer. That's the reason Christians have trouble with this one. But... Who do we defraud? We defraud money as our master. We're not faithful to money. That's why it's easy to give. We're trying to make friends for eternity. And so it's easy for us to give. Say, well, this is not going to last long. But when we have the world's point of view, say, hey, there's no money in that. And we don't do it. Hey, we're being faithful to money. We're not being faithful to God.